welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Thursday, April 16th, 2015. It's just after 2:40 UTC as we record this. I'm Sam Minter, and we have Yvonne Bo with us again. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello. Well, you know, so, I don't know, we spent here, you know, a few weeks ago, I kept talking about how we don't have technical difficulties anymore, and I think we spent here, like, just 10 minutes waiting to make sure we were recording or some shit like that.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've mentioned before, my computer's getting up there, although I've noticed at this point, like, even if I decided right now, okay, let's do it, let's get the new computer, it's like, if you look at the life cycle of iMacs, we're now at the part of the year where it's better
to wait a few more months. Launch a new one.
Yeah, because like they did launch the new Retina display one, and that's still relatively new. But the rest of the and if I got one, I'd probably get that one. Let's be honest. But the rest of the line is still kind of old, and they usually refresh it like in the fall. So we're getting close enough that it's like, if this died tomorrow, I would do it now, of course. But if it doesn't die tomorrow, I'm at this point probably waiting till the next new one comes out.
And then I was like,
also, I should say, I mentioned it is doing a bunch of stuff right now. This was perhaps going to be one of the things I mentioned in the lightning round, but I upgraded to the newest version of OS X, which came out, version 10.10.3.
Yep.
And one
I
of
did
the
that thing, as well.
One of the things that happened there is the new Photos app replacing iPhoto.
Yep.
And so I set that up and started it up.
Oh, shit. You have that massive album. That thing's probably fucking like going to
so
take.
It is in the process right now of uploading 80,000 photos to iCloud.
God.
80,000 photos and videos.
Well, it's going to take a while.
So I just paused that because it, you know, because it was.
Yeah,
taking
because
up,
this is going to take a while.
It was taking up 70% of my CPU and it was slowing down like the I was just bringing up. All I was doing was bringing up a window so I could verify that the recording was happening and it was being really slow. I paused it. Everything came up right away. You know, so that you know, so I've got things like that going
on. Yeah, that could slow down. And then I was doing to Sam my usual rant about, you know, Facebook just recommending friends that I just have no idea who the hell they are. Now, before, for whatever reason, for a while, I kept getting recommended basically what looked like strippers or hookers. Okay, all right?
I don't see... Yeah, that seems like appropriate to you, Yvonne. What's the problem?
I get why that would probably have seemed appropriate, but you know, to a certain extent, but it was just weird. I mean, I'm like, really? I mean, all of these look like strippers or hookers. I mean, really? Okay, look, I've met plenty of them. I know what they look like. Believe me, they all look like that. Don't know why I kept getting recommended. Like,
oh yeah, way to stereotype people there.
Yeah, sorry about that. It's not stereotype. This is reality. So anyway, look, so now Facebook has stopped doing that. But for example, I have recommendations to these people who I have no friends in common, and I am trying to find any reason in their profile why in God's name it would recommend them to me, and I can't figure out a damn reason. I mean, I don't recognize anything about them. I'm looking at pictures that they've posted, friends. I mean,
not the same school, not the same city, not anything.
Nothing. No. And I'm just like, I would love to figure
maybe out. They have liked similar things on Facebook.
Is that what I guess maybe I just don't know what the algorithm is that Facebook is.
Although you'd think like that would be a bit of a stretch here because it's trying to figure out people you might actually know in person. It's not just saying like Twitter would potentially want to recommend people that you might be interested in because you share similar interests and maybe they'll share interesting things. But Facebook, for the most part, is looking for people you actually have some sort of personal connection to.
Sure. And I'm like, I'm looking at anything in this fucking, I mean, like, and I can't, I mean, there, look, most of the recommendations are people that I know through some people, but there's like this other guy that I keep getting recommended. Okay. All right. Can I say the guy's name? I don't know.
Do initials or something.
Some guy. Okay. RB. Okay. I'm going to call him. It says here he's from Waterford, Michigan. Now, you know me. I've never lived anywhere near fucking Waterford, Michigan. Okay. All right. I am looking, and I've gotten this guy's recommendation for, I'm going to say, the last year or more to recommend as a friend of mine. There is absolutely nothing in this guy's profile, places he's lived, people, anything, not one goddamn reason. Sorry, by cursing.
Yeah, you've done that several times in the last minute or so. You're slipping.
I would be friends with this person. I don't get it. I don't even like the way he looks.
Hey, the bell's back.
Oh, we got the bell.
I ordered a new bell. The old one is still who the hell knows where. Oh, yeah. There goes wearing it.
Alex knows, but you know he's not.
He's really not telling. He took it and hid it somewhere.
Those details. Yeah. So anyway, I don't know. That was my rant and rave on that. I don't know. I was ranting about something before we started as well. Something else. I can't remember what the hell it is anymore. For God's sakes, because I'm talking about this.
Anyway, we do have a real show coming up. We got three things, the three major topics today. Two of them are presidential candidates, because we're in the habit of when a new one announces, at least a new one anybody cares about, we'll talk about them a bit. So we got Clinton, of course, officially jumping in the race, and
Yeah, no idea she was planning to run.
No idea. This is a shock to everybody.
Everybody was shocked.
And I am particularly shocked because she couldn't wait two more swear weeks. Because I predicted she would announce in May.
Oh, gosh. Oh, you know.
Anyway, we also have Rubio announced this week, and we'll talk about him some. And then finally, Congress actually moved a bit on the Iran deal, and specifically requiring congressional involvement in approval of any final deal. And this is interesting because it was actually fully 100% bipartisan in the end.
And not just that apparently for some reason President Obama said that he was going to be okay with it.
Well, his hands were tied. Basically. Like, there were veto-proof majorities here. Anyway, we'll talk about that more, and then we'll have a lightning round, and that'll be the show. So that's our plan. We're going to take a break, and we'll come back, and we'll get started talking about Miss Hillary. Back after this. Okay, so Hillary Clinton is running for president.
Oh my God, that is the most shocking announcement, especially since she announced in April.
Yeah, damn it. anyway, I was close.
You were close. You were very close. You're close.
And there were some people actually talking about May, but then they were like, she needs to go ahead and do it because she's...
Well, everybody started announcing all this week, you know. We had, who the hell, first, you know, so the first announcer was really Mr. Cruz,
right? We had Cruz, and then Paul, and then Clinton, and then Rubio. Those are the major ones who have gone so far. And I'm actually not... I don't have yet hearing rumors of specifically who's next. We've got like a number of people saying, you know, obviously we've got all the regular suspects who are thinking about it, obviously. But none of them are like saying, okay, the announcement's going to be next week or anything like that. So we'll see.
The one thing that I was going to say that's going to be strange is because we were all expecting obviously Jeb to also announce is that we're going to have two candidates announced that actually live in, I mean, not even in Florida. They live in Miami.
Right. Okay. Right. We'll do Rubio's the next segment. Let's talk about Clinton here.
So there
are a couple of things here. So one, I just want to say in general, this won't have an effect. Like nobody's going to be what I'm about to mention. Nobody's going to say, oh, my God, and remember this and it's going to affect their vote. However, her announcement day was actually fairly
low key.
Well, it was intentionally low-key, but it was also not very well organized, not very well coordinated. And so you had, for instance, the rumors leaked 24 to 48 hours in advance that she would announce on noon on Sunday. Okay.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then people were like, oh, wait, not going to be noon. You know, it
would be, and not even that. People were just waiting at noon.
Right.
And
right.
The rumor was also that it was going to be announced via a tweet on social media that she was going to tweet from her Hillary Clinton account and make it official. There were a variety of rumors surrounding exactly what was going to happen. Noon came and went and nothing. 1 o'clock came and went, nothing. 2 o'clock came and went, nothing. And of course, all the media type folks are going absolutely nuts. Because they have. Because
on Twitter, they're going berserk. They're like, what the hell? You know?
Right. And so they're going nuts and making up all kinds of memes about what happened to Hillary and what's going on and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, so eventually around 3 o'clock, there was actually an announcement, but it wasn't an announcement. It was a letter sent out to donors from John Podesta, one of Clinton's staff, saying, it's on, send us money. You know, basically.
Yeah.
And then over the next hour or two, we got the website turned on. We got the video. Then we finally did get a tweet from the Hillary Clinton account saying that she was in. But it was sort of raggedly spaced, not well timed. And the first thing to come out wasn't here, everybody, I'm running. It was here, donors, she's running, send us money, which is just kind of a weird impression to give. Now, of course, the thing is, this impression is only going to matter to the people who are actually paying attention on that day, which are political geeks, not normal
right.
people.
Not right.
But here's the thing. It's not to me an indication of, you know, people are going to be like, oh, she screwed up her introduction, therefore I won't vote for her. No, not at all. However, the fact that this was so ragged says something about the organization of her team. That this was not well coordinated. It was not put out in order. And also, I mean, I know she's intentionally trying to do it low key, but every other candidate who's come out so far, even if they've put out a video or a tweet or whatever, have also on the day given a speech in front of a live audience and said something to somebody. And she did no such thing.
Well, I
just want to go back to the organization thing. Here's the thing. This should not be entirely surprising. If you remember her previous campaigns or Bill Clinton and how he ran his White House, you know, Bill Clinton had the reputation of always being late for everything, always being a little bit disorganized about everything. And I think you're seeing some of that here. But the question is, you know, can they get it together in the places that matter? Like, the introduction day doesn't really matter, okay? It'll be long forgotten.
What's his name? Teddy Cruz had that crazy announcement that he did it in front of what the hell students?
Liberty University, I believe.
Right, which were all basically forced to sit there basically for yes. the announcement. You know, yes. I'm like, I don't know. And I don't think anybody's going to care about that. I mean, well, I don't think anybody's going to vote for him, but, you know.
Well, again, I don't think anybody's going to particularly care about the opening day shenanigans. But, yeah, it makes me wonder, you know, okay, they need to get their communication strategy straight. They need to coordinate things so that, you know, they're being consistent on their message. And Twitter doesn't spend 4 hours making fun of them for being late. You know, and these things, okay, 4 hours came and went and now no one cares. But in the world of Twitter, in the world of instantaneous social media, these things have certainly the possibility of exploding way out of proportion and right. little errors getting magnified into like craziness. And you have to be tight enough that you don't let those opportunities happen, or at least you minimize them. And I'm not sure her team has that discipline. From the first day, it just seemed like it just seemed sloppy. And I know it was their first day and they're still getting the hang of it. But, you know, this is the same kind of thing. I mean, when she was reacting to that press conference on the emails, she didn't even have her full staff in place at that point. And that also seemed sort of sloppy.
Yes, it did.
You know, and so far, that's kind of the theme. So the question is, do they get their act together and how fast? And I think they probably will. But it's not been it's been kind of rough so far, to be honest.
Well, look, they ran a much tighter ship when they did the campaign in 2008 that I remember. OK, overall through I'm talking you know, compared to the announcement to the overall campaign.
Yeah.
I mean, other than a couple of things like Bill going a little bit AWOL and some of the stuff and whatever, I mean, you know, they it wasn't a disorganized cluster. Okay.
Right.
So I'm going to guess that they're going to get it back. They're going to be more organized going through the rest of it. I think that they, you know, as some people try to be, I think they were trying to be cool or hip with the announcement. Hey, let's not talk. We're going to do social media. We're going to publish it. God only knows. Maybe they're using the email server, which they took down or something or whatever. And maybe it choked. Who knows? Whatever. And they start arguing. Who the hell knows? Apparently, you're not the most tech savvy people in history. So therefore, who knows? I think maybe a bit trying to overdo it and probably
continue with that. One of the things that they were criticized heavily for in 2008. Not taking Iowa seriously, specifically, but also a little bit New Hampshire, but specifically Iowa. And so she went into Iowa, assuming she was the presumptive nominee in 2008. She took a helicopter from town to town. She came in, helicoptered in.
Apparently, she was on a bus or a car.
We'll get to that. But in 2008, she gave these presentations in front of crowds and went away. She didn't participate in the sort of one-on-one, what they call retail politics, that the people in Iowa expect.
Love, right.
And so she lost in Iowa and gave Obama his big opening. And people came off, you know, basically she left people with the impression of being entitled, feeling like she already had it, feeling like she was above everybody else. She's a celebrity. She's this bigwig, blah, blah, blah. And that hurt her in 2008. So they're trying to really compensate for that this time. And one of the open questions is, do they overcompensate? But so, yes, she started out, her big first campaign thing was she took a van, not even one of these big campaign buses, but it's like, you know, one of these, it's like the A-team van, you know?
Yeah, somebody was talking, like somebody first mentioned, he said, oh, Hillary's driving. And then somebody corrected, no, Hillary hasn't driven in like 20 years.
Yeah, I'm sure she appreciated that being in the news story. But yeah, and of course they're calling it themselves. They're calling it like the Scooby van from like Scooby-Doo. But it's that kind of van. And they started out in New York or wherever and drove their way across Pennsylvania, Ohio, et cetera, heading to Iowa. And they weren't giving out their agenda and itinerary to the media. They were just sneaking in places and stopping at rest stops. I mean, the big thing, the first big thing that hit on here is she stopped at a Chipotle, ate food, and left without being recognized. And they only found out later when like a reporter called up the Chipotle and said, "Hey, was Hillary Clinton there?" And the manager was like, "No." And then he went and checked his the surveillance tapes, and it's like, "Oh yeah, there she was." She ordered a burrito, you know,
a burrito bowl.
Yeah, a burrito bowl. Sorry. And apparently, I guess there was at least one person who was like taking pictures and they were like, why is that person taking pictures? But, you know, anyway, so that tells you a couple things about like, you know, okay, the general public is not yet quite clued in enough that like, oh, wow, it's Hillary Clinton. You know, but also she's trying to do this stealth thing. And she did this in a number of towns and cities on the way. And then even when she got to Iowa, it was sort of last minute stuff without a lot of big in advance press hubbub. The press actually trying to chase her and figure out where she's going next, as opposed to like a big press entourage with her. Because that was also one of the criticisms in 2008 is that everywhere she went, there was like a 200-person entourage that went with her. And now that's apparently much, much thinned down for the moment. She, of course, does have Secret Service.
Now, I guess B.A. Baracus is going along with her or something,
I guess. She, of course, has Secret Service because she's a former First Lady. But even staff is relatively small there. And I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. Obviously, this is a strategy that pretty much only exists through Iowa and New Hampshire, and then it changes radically after that. But Iowa and New Hampshire are both designed as they're very low population states compared to a lot of others. They're very rural, not exclusively, but lots of rural areas. And the expectation there in both states is that the candidates are going to be doing lots and lots of small events, showing up in diners, shaking people's hands, talking to people one-on-one, all of this kind of thing, rather than dropping into town, giving a big speech in front of hundreds, and then leaving again. And so it'll be interesting. We've got a year of this. Well, not quite a year. You know, we've got from now through January, roughly, of this kind of stuff. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens here. Another interesting fact, and then we'll I'll ring the bell on Clinton, is I just wanted to point out, because some of us who've been around a little longer don't fully realize this. But, you know, my daughter, 19 years old, this will be her first presidential election. Okay? The last time Hillary ran in 2008, she was 11.
Mm-hmm.
And so barely cognizant of politics. And so, you know, she doesn't have, and this applies to a whole large group of younger voters, but there's a good number of them. You know, a lot of the baggage that comes with Hillary Clinton that most of us who've been around a little longer have, because we remember her from 2008, you know, it well, just doesn't there. Yeah, it's like but, a fresh but, opinion. But, and I'll add, okay, when her husband was president, my daughter was 2.
Sure. But you got to remember that even still, the majority of the voters are older.
Okay? Yes, absolutely. The young folks are always a challenge to get out and vote. But even when you go a little bit older, you know, a lot of this is ancient history, and a lot of folks are essentially going to be seeing Hillary Clinton for the very first time. And even for those who aren't, for anybody who's not sort of a news and politics junkie like you and I are, memories of 2008, let alone the 90s.
Oh yeah,
are long faded.
They can't remember what they can, you know. I don't know what the heck we're talking about last week, John Oliver. None of these fucking people can remember who Edward Snowden is, for God's sakes. Let alone what the hell are going to remember Clinton.
Yeah, so like you get Hillary Clinton going into a Chipotle and nobody recognizes her. you know, and it, which to me is like dumbfounding. Like you know.
I mean, geez, I went into like I don't know.
She was like wearing sunglasses.
For God's sakes, I was sitting down at a freaking like hotel at a restaurant. I saw Pat Robertson. For God's sakes, what the hell? I freaking recognized him in 2 seconds, you know, or other people like that. I mean, I was at a place. I walked past Steven Spielberg, for the love of God.
Right.
I freaking realized, damn it. I mean, how you don't see Steven Spielberg on TV that often, or his image, and I like realized, whoa, wait a second, that's Steven Spielberg, and yeah, that was, but you know, but yeah, but these people, Jesus, I don't know.
The vast majority of people aren't tuned in on a day-to-day basis here. So what's going to happen is all of these candidates, Hillary Clinton included, even with her long, long history, for a lot of people, it's going to be just like starting fresh, and yep. So the impression she makes now is more important than the impression she made in 2008 or in the 90s, despite all of that history.
I will say this, that there are certain people that are certainly more recognizable than others that just lift the crowd. Because I just remember, there's this one time, a couple of us were standing at this place, and the guy that walked in was Sean Connery. Okay, we were sitting at a restaurant. Everybody recognized who the hell Sean Connery was. That was no, I mean,
you well, know what? Yeah, and this is the thing. Like, if it was a celebrity who's on TV or in movies all the time.
Yeah.
But, you know, politicians, like, you know, yes, political junkies and news junkies know them left and right, you know?
Right.
And we would probably recognize, you know, maybe not all 100 senators, but we would recognize a fair number of senators if they walked in the door.
Recognize a good number of senators. Yep.
That's not true of the normal person. And so there you go.
All right.
Well past time. We'll take a break. We'll be back and we'll talk about Marco Rubio.
Rubio.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Rubio.
Rubio.
Back after this. Okay, we are back. So, Yvonne, you're the Floridian here, and so you probably have a lot more history on Mr. Rubio. Tell us about this Rubio guy and what he's doing.
Well, you know, Rubio was a representative to the Florida House for a very long time, and, you know, he's very young, Republican, Cuban-American, you know, he was born in the U.S., if I remember correctly. I mean, he wasn't born in Cuba. I mean, his parents obviously have been here for quite a long time.
And not like Mr. Cruz, who was born in Canada.
Right, no, he was born in Miami, and, you know, his parents had come over. He was a very popular person down in Miami, and which is a reason why when he ran for the Senate, he won. I think he has a reputation. He's not a full teabagger. Okay. All right. I know he panders a lot to that.
Well,
but,
the thing,
you know, he's one of the guys that, for example, was for, heaven forbid, immigration reform, for example, and some of the things. I think that the Republicans like him. Like, I've seen a couple of different candidates, because the Republicans do so poorly with Hispanics that I think that a lot of Republicans really find him just attractive in terms of like trying to see if they can bridge that gap.
Just for history, didn't Republicans tend to always do very well, specifically in the Cuban community?
Republicans have done pretty well in the Cuban community, specifically because of a very hardline stance against Cuba. Okay, now that hasn't translated into a bigger picture in the rest of the U.S. because in the rest of the U.S. they've been very, you know, Democratic. But with the Cuban community, because of a hardline stance against communism, that has been that way. But those stats have changed a lot even over the last few years. There was a conversation recently. I was listening and talking to local talk radio. They were talking about how, now with the lifting of the embargo, how that generationally there is a divide between the Cubans, okay? Between, like, you got certain people in their families where their parents are so appalled at the lifting of the embargo, and the children are like, you know what? It didn't work. It doesn't matter.
Now,
you know,
is this generational divide basically the people who can remember pre-revolution Cuba versus the people who can't? Or is it
the people that either were exiled, period, from Cuba,
right,
that remember that? And, you know, then you've got this entire total generation that hasn't been to Cuba at all, period.
They're basically Americans.
Yeah. And they just do not.
Well, I mean, a lot of we're talking about American citizens in general here.
Yeah.
But there's a difference between sort of a person who was born and raised in the United States and Americanized,
became a naturalized citizen and then moved, versus these guys were born and raised here. I mean, a lot of them barely speak Spanish. So that's what I think. You have that generational divide. I think Rubio is seen by a lot of people as a guy that can bridge a lot of those gaps. But at the same time, I think that he has a whole bunch of positions that I think make him very difficult to be nominated at the current Republican Party, because he is not a complete hardcore anti-immigration guy.
Well, and this is where the connection with George not George, with Jeb Bush has come in, because these have always been, these two have all often been compared to each other, and Rubio has often been mentioned actually as a protege of Jeb Bush, and for the longest time you had people saying that Rubio wasn't going to run if Jeb did. But then, you know, as part of, Rubio's, rollout speech, he's like, you know, people say, wait your turn. I'm not waiting my turn, you know? But people have always compared them as being somewhat similar in a lot of these ways in terms of not being hardcore Republicans all the way down the line, but having a lot of, places specifically on immigration type issues where, you know, they disagree with a significant portion of the core of the Republican Party.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, they are very similar in a lot of respects in terms of where they live, background, and so forth, to a certain extent. Because I mean, they've lived a lot of time down here in South Florida. They actually live relatively close. I mean, Rubio lives in West Miami. Jeb lives in Coral Gables, you know, which are really close. The other day, there was a story apparently that they both got on a flight. They were heading somewhere. Apparently, they both wound up sitting next to each other on a flight.
Just
on
a like commercial a few weeks flight. Ago?
Yeah, this was like last week, okay, as a matter of fact. And a lot of people, they were like, as they were interviewing Rubio, they were asking him, so what the heck did you guys talk about? And they were like, well, look, we did talk about the election, obviously. I'm not going to lie to you about that. But honestly, although we talked about that to a certain extent, a little bit, for the most part, look, we know each other from a whole bunch of other stuff. We spent talking about family, vacation stuff, football, the Dolphins, Miami Dolphins, for God's sake, you know, talking about football, that kind of stuff. Honestly, we spent a lot more time probably talking about that we actually spent talking about the election. So, and apparently there's some pictures on the web, you know, because a lot of people like saw them and it was so hilarious that, you know, a lot of people on the plane were like taking pictures of them together on the plane and so forth. But I, you know, I just don't see that this year is the time year. That No. Yeah, I just don't see it.
Here's the things I heard. First of all, when he gave his introductory speech, and it's one of the few I managed to actually catch live. Like most of these I've read about after the fact. He was actually pretty impressive. He gave a good speech. You know,
he is a very articulate speaker.
He looked approachable. He looked like a guy you wouldn't mind hanging out with. He, you know, he didn't seem like he was, you know, a rabid, hateful kind of guy like some of these other guys come off across.
He isn't.
It looked like you would watch him and like, oh, not bad. You know, maybe we should consider him. And I saw a lot of people saying, don't underestimate Rubio. But I also saw a bunch of
just the base. I don't think that the Republican base is willing to accept this guy.
And the difference is, you know, Jeb Bush also has all kinds of issues with the base, but
he's Bush.
And what that means is he's got tons and tons of money behind him.
Right.
You know,
he's got a lot more than Marco. Definitely. Yeah,
he's got all kinds of financing lined up behind him. He's got all kinds of party bigwigs lining up behind
Jeb
him.
Jeb himself is very rich. Okay. Let's be clear about this. Okay. Jeb a ton of money. Okay. In business. Okay. Over his career. Okay. So it's not like he's short on cash either. Okay. But aside from that, the fundraising prowess that he could get is also a lot bigger than I think that, you know, Marco can get, you know.
Yeah. And the other thing, one of the thoughts I had because a lot of people were saying, you know, don't underestimate him. But then a lot of other folks were, yeah, but he's really young. And the Republican Party went through, you know, 8 years of disparaging us picking a first term senator to be president. And look how bad Obama turned out because of that. So it's hard to turn on a dime and say it's OK to have another first term senator who's very young. So then the question comes up, well, is he really running for vice president? But then you think, well, if it's Jeb, he actually can't, because you can't have the president and vice president from the same state. So the only way he can get a VP, even be considered for VP, is if somebody other than Jeb wins. So maybe you have a Scott Walker and Rubio or something like that might be a combination.
You see, here's the thing, and that's the thing about it. I mean, you know, we talk about how Rubio's articulate, you know, whatever, whatnot, but the reality is that Scott Walker probably panders a hell of a lot more to the base than a Rubio does.
Well, and that's why this is perhaps one of these combinations that you could see is, you know, Walker winning with the base, getting them in place, and then picking somebody like Rubio to try to make a play at Florida.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because
most paths that lead to actual Republican victories require the Republicans to figure out how to get Florida. Which right now, most candidates.
I will say this. I still don't know if Rubio is a guy that would help carry Florida. And reason is because of how Florida. Listen, because Rubio is a guy from South Florida. Okay. Right. All right. And this state is really two states. Okay. All right. You got North Florida and South Florida. And they're so very divergent. I don't know if, like, because he's Cuban. I don't know if he carries North Florida. I really don't. I don't know if he resonates with Northern Floridians. I don't know.
And I was going to pull up the polling real quick, but it's going to take me a minute, so I'll do that after the next break before we start on other stuff. But I could see that kind of combination, because it's also broader than that. The question is, can he appeal to Hispanics in general? Because that matters in a lot of potential areas, and it's one area that a whole bunch of folks have sort of assumed that the Republicans are just losing that battle in a lot of states. But if they bring someone on board who can appeal to that demographic, then maybe they make some things competitive that, you know, they might not have otherwise.
Yep. Okay. Well, I think it's about all we got on Rubio. So let's take a break.
Hold on just a second. Okay, so I just edited out a pause there while I pulled up some stats. But before we ended the segment, I just wanted to get some of the polling in Florida just to give folks an idea. The top five best polled candidate combinations right now are Clinton versus Bush, Paul, Christie, Huckabee, and Walker. Rubio is actually a little bit further down in I forget, he's number eight or something. Whatever. But anyway, so just to give you an idea of those. Of those five I mentioned, Bush, Paul, Christie, Huckabee, Walker, Bush is the only one who makes Florida close. The current polling average in Florida actually has Bush slightly up by 0.2%, basically a dead heat in Florida. But by comparison, against Paul, Paul is losing by 9.8%. Florida by 9.8%. Christie is losing Florida by 10.4%. Huckabee is losing Florida by 9.2%. And Walker is losing Florida by 6.7%. Rubio is better than anybody else except Bush. He's losing by 4.8% right now. So he actually makes Florida somewhat closer than any of the other Republicans besides Bush.
Interesting.
Now is still not like ahead.
It's
like
still Bush's. Not carrying it, right?
Right, but it's within shooting distance.
But it sure as hell makes it a hell of a lot more competitive match.
Right, and you're probably not going to get something like Walker Bush as your combination. You know, Jeb Bush is probably not going to want a VP slot, but Rubio would probably jump for it.
Yeah.
And Rubio also, by the way, because of Florida law, has to not run for Senate in order to run for president. So he is giving up his Senate seat to do this.
That's why already. I mean, there's the guy who beat Alan West for his seat already jumped on the I'm running for that Senate seat. In Florida right now, and a couple of other people.
Whereas, meanwhile, for instance, Rand Paul is still working its way through the process in Kentucky, but he's getting things, because Kentucky had a similar law. You couldn't run for both Senate and president at the same time. But they're basically working out a way to finesse that so that he can. So he's running for both. But Rubio can't. And so by jumping in for president, he's giving up basically a fairly secure Senate slot that he probably would have kept for a while.
Yeah, he would have.
To do this.
So, I was surprised. I mean, I got to be honest with you. That's why it surprised me that he decided to run. I mean, I thought he had a pretty good – he could have had a pretty decent run there on that Senate seat. I'm pretty sure he would have won re-election, but it is what it is. So
there you go. Okay. There goes the bell. I should actually do the bell when we hit a certain time. I have forgotten this time. So anyway, we're going to take a break, and we will come back with everybody's favorite, the lightning round. Back after this.
You're in the Valley, AM 1620 and LiganairRadio.com. This is where you'll find your favorite songs. Everybody's doing a brand new dance now. Come on, baby. Let's do the twist.
Well, they got a new dance and it goes like this.
Classic music for a classic American town, AM 1620, and in stereo at LiganairRadio.com, The Valley.
So, this is Sam from the future. Those of you paying close attention will have noticed that in the introduction, we said that our third major topic was going to be Congress and the agreement they came to put some constraints on the president, and basically they'd have to come back to Congress to get the Iran deal approved, and how this turned out to be a very bipartisan effort, and the president's hands were tied, and he basically had no choice but to go along with it because they had veto-proof majorities. But then at the end of the last segment, you noticed me saying, hey, the next thing up is the lightning round, and the truth is, well, Yvonne and I just completely forgot that third segment. I didn't realize until after we'd finished the show, and I looked back and said, hey, we've got one less segment than we should have. What's going on here? And after I verified that we, in fact, had recorded everything and I hadn't just missed recording a segment, I realized, oh, we didn't talk about Iran and Congress and all of the politics associated with that. Oh, well, maybe if it's still relevant, we'll talk about it next week, but most likely we'll have moved on to other things. Sorry about that. Anyway, this little bit of me talking serves as the third segment. Kind of boring, but here's another quick break, and then we'll get to the lightning round, the actual, well, you know, that's silly. Let's not do the break. Here comes the lightning round. Do do do, and we are back, and it's time for the lightning round.
Yeah. Okay. So
I think you should start this time. 1 minute rounds. We go.
I guess
we hit
you put
minutes.
As a new subject my son's new bed. Yes, I got my son a new bed. Okay.
Yeah. It's, yeah. A big boy bed. A full size bed.
A full-size bed. As a matter of fact, I got more than a big boy bed. I got a bed I said that's just going to be until, you know, basically, this bed is big enough until he turns, he's an adult.
Yeah, I saw pictures of this bed. This is an adult-size bed.
Yes, it's an adult-size bed. And it's a bunk bed, which some people, it triggered some questions from some people as to why we bought bunk beds. I'm like, the only reason I got the bunk bed is simply because I figured that, you know, friends of his, like I used to do at some point, would like to sleep over. And so therefore they need a place to sleep in.
Well, and I'll tell you this. Look, Alex, his bed is still officially, you actually gave us his crib when he was born, and it was a convertible. So it was the kind of thing that starts out as a crib and then you can convert it. And then it gets to be a larger and larger bed over the years. Mm-hmm. And we converted it from a crib to a bed a long time ago. And there's one more size up. We can convert it. Honestly, though, we got into a pattern. He hasn't slept in his actual room in like a year.
What? Where's he sleeping?
He'll sometimes in the living room, sometimes in our bedroom, wherever. I mean, we sleep all over the place too. We're a chaotic family. It's not like whatever. Anyway, but we've been thinking about getting him a new bed too, to try to encourage him back into the habit of sleeping in his own room, because that has other advantages you might be able to imagine.
You think?
We would be thinking about some sort of bunk bed thing, or maybe one of these loft things where it's a bed on top and then you have like a little work area underneath, something like that. Not necessarily because, you know, there's a secret plan of like more little children or anything, but because it's sometimes convenient. I mean, sometimes you want the choice of going up or down, and sort of the arrangement, sort of like if you do stick like a desk or something underneath it instead of a second bed, that gives you like more workspace so that you can do stuff with. So there are lots of I had a bunk bed most of my childhood up through my teenage years. And I never had a sibling at that point. I gained a little sister when I was 19 years old and already in college. But, you know, it was a bunk bed just for me. Sometimes I'd sleep on top. Sometimes I'd sleep on the bottom. It depended on what I felt like.
I figured and that he will do that too as well. At some point, he'll be like, I don't want to sleep at the bottom. I want to sleep at the top. So I figured he'll do that too. Yeah. You know.
There you go. Okay, so my pick... feedback. We got more feedback again.
More feedback.
So this feedback is once again from our listener, Jen. And she said, I figured I'd give you more feedback since you seem to really like feedback. So she had 4 points. Number one, do you do nuclear on purpose? It makes me twitch. Because, of course, I say nuclear and not nuclear. Or however
nuclear.
Nuclear. That's right. And here's the reason. Up until about eighth grade, I lived in North Carolina. I mean, I lived other places too, but a significant part of the time I lived in North Carolina. So I actually have remnants of a Southern accent, and that's where nuclear comes from. Jimmy Carter said it that way too. It is not a conscious effort to do it on purpose. It is not that I don't know that. That's not correct. It's that, you know, that's sort of the way I grew up saying it, and it's very highly ingrained, and I've never cared enough to, consciously try to say nuclear. It seems unnatural to me. So that's number one. Number two, and since we've been sort of slipping on this show, especially in the beginning of the show, I kind of missed the cursing. It made me laugh. Yvonne has the best outbursts. Maybe slightly less restraint. My apologies to your mom.
All right. I'll try to balance it out to some extent. Okay. All right. Okay. I'll try. I'm sorry. Sorry, Sam's mom. I'll try.
We're getting conflicting like I said before, feedback.
I was overboard. We did the stats. You're right. I'll try to balance it out. Okay.
And then she quotes me saying, "People say I'm too verbose," and she says that made her spit tea into her laptop when she heard me say that. And then finally, a quote from you, Yvonne. That's not an extrovert. That's an idiot. Not only was Yvonne right, but he made me cackle. You can hate us extroverts for being energy vampires, but we're not all idiots.
Sorry. Anyway.
Your turn. Right.
My turn. Crap. What the heck? Let's see. Cuba off the terror list. Okay.
Yeah.
So they took Cuba off the terror list. I don't know. My thing about it is, does it really matter at this point?
Also, I'll just add the terror list is stupid because it's not based on a well-defined series of criteria that kick into play no matter what the political folks say.
Right. Like, it's a very subjective thing.
It's not only subjective, it's primarily a political classification. It doesn't actually mean groups that support terrorism. It's groups that we currently want to oppose.
Correct.
You know, So yeah, sure. You can make the argument that, okay, maybe Cuba should have been in there because of some of the stuff they've supported in the past. Iran maybe should be in there because of some of the things they support in the past. But if you had any sort of consistent standard, you'd add Saudi Arabia to the list. You'd add half a dozen other countries to the list. Hell, you'd probably add us to the list.
Maybe.
You know? So, yeah, so it's crazy, but also it's outdated. It was not helpful in this situation. So, you know, take them off. I don't see that it makes a big, huge difference. That it's just a stepping stone on the normalization of relations, which Obama has embarked on. And of course, still has people, you know, we were talking about Rubio, still has people like Rubio flipping out every time he takes another step.
And by the way, most people support. So anyway,
most people support it.
Yes.
Okay. Me again and another feedback.
We had more feedback.
This was by Twitter. Our listener Bruce, after listening to last show, tweeted, "I'm glad to hear that Sam," he used my Twitter handle Abelsmay, "stands with Rand Paul," and then Curmudgeon's Corner and a link to us. And I actually responded by Twitter a couple hours after he tweeted that and said, "You know, is that what you got? I thought I said." Probably the best Republican, but I doubt I could vote for him in the general. And interesting mix of wow, I agree, someone is saying it, and oh my God, what planet century is he from? Which isn't quite the same as saying I stand with Rand.
Yeah, I stand with Rand!
So anyway, Bruce responded that it was a tepid endorsement, but he's sure I'll get more convinced as the debates start. And just reading off some of the Twitter conversation, I mentioned that I listened to Rand Paul's Meet the Press interview, and it was actually pretty good. I agreed with a lot of what he said in that interview. He seemed pretty reasonable in that interview, but he also seemed to be avoiding some of the topics I know I disagree with him on, which frankly are more mostly on the social side of things, and also even on the economic things. I think he's, even when he's got sort of directionally something that makes sense, he wants to go way too far beyond where I would go. So... we'll see that. Bruce also mentioned that we were saying that he would lose votes by moderating his positions. And by the way, moderating's perhaps a bad term in this context, because we were talking about sort of moving towards the Republican base, which probably isn't what most people mean by moderating. And Bruce thinks he'll gain more people than he loses by that. I'm not sure the non-libertarian Republicans will buy the shift. Those other Republicans already have candidates they like more, and meanwhile he's peeling away some of his core. But we'll see. The bottom line question I think is, does he end up doing better in the delegate race than his father did? And there also, I tweeted an article about this early in the week too. There have been a bunch of rules changes that the Republican Party has made to actually discourage the type of a delegate collecting that Ron Paul did in 2012.
That's what I'm saying. It's even bigger winner take all.
So well, it's not just
like
winner take all. I mean, Ron Paul's strategy in various cases was, especially in caucus states, don't worry about the initial vote all that much, but rally people to come to the later stages of the caucuses, get the activists in there, get the activists to vote. And when your guys are aggressively showing up and the other guys are, who cares? Romney's already won. To sort of rack up delegates in the later part of the process when everybody else isn't paying attention anymore because it's clear that Romney's going to win. And they've made a bunch of rules changes to keep that from happening and making it so that the delegate counts will reflect the initial votes, even in caucus states and in primary states as well, and sort of binding the delegates more aggressively and giving
to the numbers. Gotcha.
Binding the delegates to the numbers and also giving the at the convention, giving them the power to say that even if the individual delegate who shows up, if he votes in a way different than he was supposed to, it still gets registered the way it was supposed to go, not the way the delegate actually voted.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Things like that. So we'll see. We'll see. Okay. Next,
all right.
Your turn.
Okay. So I'm going to put a subject that's not on the list.
Go for it.
By the way. Okay. So we had today, Mario Draghi was given a speech at the European Central Bank, and a protester went and leapt up to the stage and started pouring confetti and some crap on it. Security had to drag them out. But you got to see, they had some good pictures of it. You got to see the pictures. I mean, you got to, I mean, the guy was freaked out. Okay, all right. This girl, by the way, whose ass actually falls out of her pants. By the way, you can see nice, in the pictures of New York Times how she's wearing some thong panties and they basically like came out. Okay, just jumps, leaps up on top of it, and then starts pouring shit on him and basically saying to end the EC with a T-shirt that said "End the ECB dictatorship." And it wasn't dictatorship, D-I-C.
Okay.
It's a D-I-C-K-T-A-tatorship. So that was kind of like interesting how the protesting in Europe has notched it up a few gears.
Of course. Okay, my turn.
Yeah. Oh no, your bell's back.
No, don't take the bell. Don't take the bell.
So much for his like lack of interaction. Anyway.
Bell. We already have this.
Yeah, okay. And now we got the dog. We got my wife. We got Alex. He's trying to steal the bell again. He's being dragged out of the room now. In case you couldn't hear, he's yelling, "That's my bell."
But that's he kept the other bell.
Okay. As I was saying, it's my turn.
Yes,
I read a book.
And
this time it was an actual physical book, not even a Kindle book. This was an actual, like, I've got the paper book right in front of me. It was awful. The book was The Online Advertising Playbook. One out of every four books I read, not counting the audiobooks, well, one out of every four of the other books I read, I try to make a book that is roughly, at least vaguely related to the kind of stuff I do for work, but I take a long time to get through my list. This was vaguely kind of sort of related to what I did for work 5 or 6 years ago. It's even less related to what I do for work today, although I guess if you stretch it, there could be some sort of connection. So I really didn't care about this book. It was also fairly old, so it's on about online advertising, but it's from like, I don't know, 6-7 years ago. So a lot has changed in the last 6 or 7 years. But I made myself read it anyway, but slowly. I read like 3 pages a day. It took me like over 3 months to read this stupid book.
And okay.
If you really have a professional need to know about online advertising, this probably still isn't the book for you because it's old. Okay? To be fair, there are some insights here that are still relevant today. But I mean, for instance, they barely talk about mobile. They barely talk about social media. You know, it's the world has changed in the last, 8 years or whatever. I'm trying to look at exactly what year this thing really was from. 2007. So 7 years ago. 8 years ago.
Yeah, so it's like the iPhone was probably, when this book was written, the iPhone didn't even exist.
Right.
Yeah.
So don't bother with this book unless you have to.
I don't
know. Yeah. Anyway. Okay, your turn. And then I think this is our last. This is our last one. Your turn and it's the last one.
Apple Watch pre-orders.
They sold a bunch of watches.
They sold a whole bunch of watches. Are we really shocked?
No, and they almost immediately sold out. And so the wait times, depending on which watch, like if you went to order a watch now, I think the earliest ones available are like a month and a half out. And if you want like the $17,000 watch, you're waiting until like August or September.
Jesus, really? Well, I'm sure they didn't make that many of those.
Yeah, they probably made three.
Yeah, so that's
although apparently there are a bunch of pictures starting to come out of various celebrities wearing ones that Apple sort of handed out as
because I've seen that there's been a number that Apple went and like already like delivered to some people, which especially because this is a fashion item, they're trying to get fashionistas and other people to have them. Yes, they provided some early deliveries of those. I mean, and it makes sense. I mean, for what they're trying to sell. You know, I tried to look to see if there was one I liked.
Did you actually go to see him in person? Because you can now make appointments to see him at the
Apple Store. I am not.
I am not going to make a special appointment for this. If I end up at the Apple Store for something else, I'll take a look. If I end up near the Apple Store for something else, I'll probably take a detour over to the Apple Store to check him out. But I'm not making a special trip for it.
Because I don't want to wind up buying one. Right. So, you know, because that's the problem. I'm sure I'm going to grab one. They're going to be like, oh, Jesus, fine. Here, give me one. I'm like, no.
They're still even if you go and see them and try them out in person, you still have to order online and get them later. I read a bunch of the reviews that came out of this on the first day, and I still look at it and I'm like, it doesn't seem like it's the device for me. I can see why some other people might like it. I look at it and say, I have no need for this.
Look. There's a lot of things in life we have no need for.
Okay, I'll add to that. I have no desire for this. Like, I tend to have lots of techno lust over things I don't need. This I don't need, and also I don't get this feeling of, oh my God, that's so cool, I must have it. It's just not coming for me. Now, I think my wife still wants one. So we may still end up with one in the house. We'll see.
You see, that's one of those things where your wife ends up getting one. Then you're like looking at it. Then you're seeing her do it, and you're like, oh, crap. Okay, get out.
I'll end up with them. But we'll see. But, you know, I will reserve judgment until I do get to play with one and see them in person, because that often changes things. I've heard a lot of people say that you don't really get this thing from reading about it. You have to touch it. You have to see it.
And more than that,
a lot of the reviews of this said specifically, the first 3 days I wore this thing, I didn't get it. It was annoying me. But then after 3 or 4 days, something clicked, and then I loved it, and I can't see how I lived without it.
Look, I got to be honest with you. When Steve Jobs launched the iPad, I was like, on the show, I said, I was kind of like, eh. Whatever. Now, if you freaking take away my iPad, I'll kill you. Okay? So, you know, I don't know. We'll see. That's it. We're done.
And we are done. So, thank you for joining us once again. Hey, we're, as of the recording to this show, we're at 48 likes on our Facebook page. We're almost at 50. Please like us if you haven't already. If you actually listen to this show, search for Curmudgeon's Corner on Facebook. Give us a like if you haven't already. I know several of you already have. We really appreciate that. Also, you know, we always say, email me the comments. You can comment right there on Facebook. And then other of our Facebook followers can join in the conversation, perhaps.
By the way, all of you also, if you hear the show, we only, on our iTunes page, there's only one review from some guy. Okay, all
some
right.
Some guy. We have no idea who that is.
We have no idea who the hell it is.
Uh-huh.
You know, go and like us there too. Post a review. You know, just you know, say, hey, you like it. You know, just you know, that would be nice.
And by the way, I could be wrong here. I don't believe you need actually iTunes and a Mac or anything like that to do that. I believe you can access all this on the web too. I believe you can. So, in any case, we've also got our normal methods of feedback. Send me email. I'm at abelsmay@abelsmay.com, or reach us on Twitter. I'm at abelsmay. Yvonne is at imbo. Soon, we will have a Twitter account specifically for the show as well. I'll probably be setting that up in the next couple of weeks for those of you who prefer that. And in the meantime, you know, keep telling your friends, share the show. Spread the word about this lovely experience of Curmudgeon's Corner, and we'll see you next week. Have a great week, everyone. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Mr. Bo.
All right. Good night.